money. It makes the world go round. It puts food on our tables and roof over our heads. We love it when we feel we can buy anything, and we hate it when we feel we can't. Many of us even hate to talk about money, much less count our assets and liabilities. But alas, count them we must. We can't get to that place where we feel secure without understanding our money and spending it wisely. As a member of the Green Connections Radio extended family, you want to spend your money in line with your socially responsible values, too. So today, we're going to help you close out the year and plan for next year with common sense money tips. Welcome to Green Connections Radio, where we help you live green, work green, and earn green. I'm Joan Michelson. We are talking innovation with top leaders and thinkers in energy and sustainability, and those who are transforming our world. You benefit from my extensive network of C-level executives, entrepreneurs, artists, authors, government leaders, and journalists, and my many years in the media and Fortune 500 companies. Find us online on greenconnectionsradio.com, iTunes, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Stitcher, and wherever you like to listen to your favorite podcasts. One of the best personal finance experts to talk to about these vexing money issues is our guest today. Michelle Singletary is a personal finance columnist for The Washington Post. It's called The Color of Money, and the author of several books on these issues, including The 21-Day Financial Fast and Spend Well, Live Rich. Welcome to Green Connections Radio, Michelle, and thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here.
Thank you. So we have a quandary, Michelle, because we live in a society, and especially a country, frankly, that's consumer-driven. We have a consumer-driven economy. One aspect of that is we're bombarded, especially during the holidays, by ads to buy stuff. The advertisers find all kinds of justifications and are getting more and more creative and sophisticated in their persuasion techniques. They use data analytics and psychology to persuade us to buy, 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 buy. Then we get lectured for not saving enough. And it's coming at us through more and more different media devices and avenues every day. So what's a financially responsible consumer to do?
Well, I hate to tell you, but you need to turn the TV off. You need to go in shutdown mode, really, because it is so overwhelming, as you say, all of the ads and push to buy, buy, buy. And so, you know, I know it sounds sort of retro to turn some stuff off, but honestly, you really have to do that. Give yourself some space. And I know that's going to be a lot of difficult because a lot of us are tethered to our devices. Now we can get TV not only in our homes but on our phones. But you got to tune it out. And one way you tune it out is to put in its place at least some idea of what you want to do with that money that you earn so hard, you work so hard for.
So that's interesting. Do you find that if people have a specific goal in mind of how they want, something they want to do with money they saved, that they actually follow through and save it more?
I do. I get this question all like, how do you save? How do I not do the temptations? And the thing about it is, in front in your face, you've got to decide, what do I want to do with this money that I work so hard for? So, for example, people who are in debt, I tell them to take out an index card. If you're listening, do that. You know, well, not if you're driving, but, you know, take out an index card and write down the totality of all your debt. And I'll even let you exclude your mortgage. And write that on that index card and then attach it to your credit cards, put it in your wallet and all the slots that you have for your cards, tape it in front of those slots so that every time you go to reach for that credit card, you see that you've got all this debt. And that hopefully will put a stopgap. If you don't have any debt but you don't have any savings, just put how much you have in your savings. If you got $20, say, you know, have a debt card, say, I only have $20. Or if you've got kids that you want to send to college debt-free, put their names down and how much it's going to cost to send them to college. I tell you, you do that, and you won't want to shop for anything. You will be enjoying the holidays in front of the fireplace because it'll be a wake-up call for the fact that those things matter more than the things that you're going to be buying and going into debt for the holidays. And I tell people all the time that it's your presence that matters, not the presents. If you go back a couple years and you ask, if I asked you what you got like two Christmases ago, you probably couldn't remember a lot of the stuff. Maybe a couple of things that you really wanted, big ticker items. But for the most part, we don't even remember the stuff that people give us. And that should tell you a lot.
You know, it's interesting you say that because I just spent the weekend cleaning out my mom's house. She's 96 and we're moving her into a new place. And she was there. We were going through things. And I ran across, you know, we had all kinds of stuff. But the things that we really talked about were like cards that I made her when I was a little girl.
Right.
You know, or pictures that my sister made or, you know, something we wrote that was just glorious. And right. the belts or the, you know, fancy purse or whatever, it's like, I don't even remember. Now that you even say it, I had completely forgotten that I had forgotten it. You know, it's like really
exactly.
amazing.
Exactly. You know, and your children will beg for stuff and they'll act, oh, I'm going to die, mommy. I'm just going to die if I don't get this. Well, they're not going to die. And then years later, what they will remember, and this is what I think about my children, how I said no to them. Is that my oldest just graduated from college debt-free. And I, you know, long before that time, when she was a little kid, was thinking, I'm going to get to a day where she's going to be grateful that she doesn't have any college debt. So I'm going to put up with all the little side eyes and the threatening to put me in a nursing home because I didn't want to buy her certain stuff. Because I knew when the day came when she walked across that stage, she had no debt, nor did we, her dad and myself. That she would be grateful. And she's actually spoken to that fact. She said, you know, I would ask for stuff and I'd get mad, but I tell you right now, this day, I'm so grateful that my mom and dad, you know, didn't give in to all my wants so that I could be debt-free.
Oh, I love that story. That's wonderful.
Yeah, she wouldn't tell us while we were growing up, you know. I mean, I thought I would have. I mean, I remember she went off to college. She wanted to go, and I wanted her to go. There was no Hallmark, you know, oh, I'm going to miss you. I was like, get out of my house because you're crazy, you know, because she's so mad about all our rules about not spending and, not, you know, not buying a lot of stuff. But I tell you now, when she graduated, and she's going to grad school debt-free, that chick is really happy right now.
Wow, so, that's great.
And that makes us happy, that it was worthwhile putting up with all the issues of them, you know, being mad that we weren't buying stuff. It's all worth it now.
Well, I hope you write a book with her and have a testament where she says, I know, I was you, I was, you know, if you're 14 right now and you're bitching and moaning to your parents that you can't possibly compete with your friends in the peer pressure because you can't buy the latest XYZ, I'm here to tell you it's worth it.
Well, you know what? That will be a great book, except we'd probably sell it to, you know, three people. My husband, our grandmother, me. Because here's the thing. They aren't going to know. I mean, I am not going to sugarcoat this stuff. They will not. You can. My daughter can tell you that. And really, she needs to tell the parents because the young adults and the children won't get it until they get it. And mm-hmm. That's okay. That's why you're the parent. That's why you got to look down the road. And, you know, how do you teach kids to be, you know, money smart? You be money smart. And then eventually they'll be money smart. And that's how you do it because, you know, I don't think you can make them see down the road like you can, but you have to do that. You have to be able to do that. And I know it's tough. I mean, we always talk about consumers and how they overspend as if, you know, it's, you know, they're so horrible folks. But it's really hard to combat all this, you know, stuff that's coming at you. And the people who create the ads and design the malls are like PhDs, they're mm-hmm. doctors, they know how to do it. I mean, really, think about this. Why do we have a food court in the mall? You're going to be there long enough that you have to have a meal? You know, that's crazy. You know, but they know that. If they have food there, you're going to hang around. They know the smells that are attractive, the colors, the way it's designed. They have couches for you to relax. You know, to me, shopping is a chore. It should be a chore. You go in what you get out, and you're out of there. But they want to make it like it's your living room because the longer you stay, the more you spend.
And they also put all the most expensive stuff out on display and the cheapest stuff not on display or
yeah,
somewhere
absolutely.
Less. So let me ask you about that. You know, it's gift-giving season, right? So how do we buy gifts for people that don't break the budget but also don't look cheap and don't reflect on us by being cheap? I mean, you can make something, but what do we do that we can do something that doesn't look cheap or tacky or nor breaks our budget?
Well, you know, I guess if I may, I actually just question the whole question, you know,
good.
Because you know, cheap isn't to be. If you only can afford, say, a hair scrunchie from the dollar store, that's all you can afford. Is that being cheap? Is that quote unquote cheap? You need to not worry about that. If it's from your heart and that's all you can afford, then that's all you can afford. And the person who thinks that it's cheap, it's on them, not you.
Oh, I love that. That's perfect.
So I don't care. I mean, I literally, you have to adopt this, like, I don't care. I mean, we keep saying it's a thought that counts, but that is such a lie. That is a lie that we tell each other because, you know, we're sizing up and, you know, you're thinking, okay, well, if I got somebody $25 worth of gifts and they get me something that's 10, you know, that's like cheap. Why didn't they match what I gave them? And it's all the stuff that we're doing to match each other and you don't have no money and I don't have no money. It's crazy town. So just get out of crazy town, right? Get in the car and drive out of crazy town. If all you can afford is what you can afford, then that ought to be enough for the person who receives it.
That's perfect. And now there are so many ways that you can get something without spending a lot of money. There's dollar stores. There's creating something yourself. There's going to the bargain book section. There's, you know, whatever. Just be, to me, it's about being creative that corresponds to the person that you want, like you're talking about the scrunchie. You know, if they have long hair, a scrunchie makes sense, right? Then it's, or a hairband
exactly
or something.
Right. How many times are you, like, working out and you reaching for a scrunchie? You're like, oh, man, that was my last scrunchie. I lost it.
That's right. Exactly.
So,
you know, you talk a lot about budgets in a lot of what you do. But what's the right way to use a budget? I mean, you know, we can create a spreadsheet of our bills per month, but then it just sits on the computer or sits someplace. How do we actually use a budget?
Well, this is going to sound crazy coming from someone who writes about personal finance. Like, it's so much not about the budget, honestly. I mean, really, it sounds crazy. I believe that you should have a budget, absolutely. But that's not what keeps people off track, because there's all kinds of tools for you to have a good budget. There's Mint.com. There's all kinds of apps. If you're one of the big banks or even a credit union, they probably got an app on their website to help you bank. I know I'm a member of a credit union and a big bank, and they have these tools where you can go in and put your money. They'll, you know, you can print out pie charts and all this kind of cool stuff. And there's some folks who just want pen and paper. That works for them. They want a piece of paper and write down what they owe and what they have, and that works for them. That is not the problem. The problem is not having a good budget. The problem is that people don't have a purpose for their money, and it's like they're in a car going to some place they've never been, and they don't have GPS, nor did they print out a map. And so that map and that GPS is, what do you want to do with your money, whatever you have, because you only have a certain amount. And once you conquer that, the budgeting thing is easy. Any old tool will work, anything. But nobody that I know that has a good budget tool has had an issue with budgeting because they started with their mind. It's how we think about money. So if you're listening and you think, how can I get this money thing, don't worry so much about the budget tool. Wrap your mind around, what can I do to combat all these tricks and stuff to get me to spend, and how can I get control over my money? And then the budget stuff, it'll just come.
I love that. And what that also does is it makes you not feel like you're missing out on something.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
I've turned down many an opportunity to go out when I thought that I would be, you know, paying for something that I really can't afford, or I frankly don't even really want to go.
And exactly.
I've had people get in my face about it, and I'm like, you know what, I'd rather go to the gym, or I'd rather, you know, sit home and read a book than go out and spend $50 that I don't want to spend.
Right. And
just
you have
because
to
you
be
want me to go.
Emboldened to do that. I mean, it sounds crazy, but that's really where, you know, and a lot of experts will say, oh, you know, you can't get expensive coffee, and they look at little thing. I won't say little because, you know, it can cost a lot, but that's not what keeps people from being financially savvy and have financial freedom. Going to the Starbucks, even if you go every day, that's not what's keeping you from not having a retirement portfolio. It's a lot of money at the end of the year, you know, maybe $1,200, but that's not why you don't have money for your retirement. It's that and everything else. So if going to Starbucks Starbucks is your thing, like that, I'm not a coffee drinker, but I do like tea. But if that's your thing, like I have to have this great cup of coffee to start off my day, because if that will keep you from slapping your coworker when you get to work, I'm gonna need you to get that coffee. I'm gonna need you to bring your lunch, okay? I'm gonna need you not to go out after work at happy hour. So you pick what is of value. So if you're like, oh, I can do without the coffee, but I kind of want to hang with my folks at a happy hour. Okay, then cut out the coffee. So you can't do everything. So pick what's important. So for me, giving a whole bunch of gifts at Christmas, that's not so important. Taking a 2-week five-star vacation with my family, that's important. So I don't buy expensive coffee. I, don't buy lunch when I'm out. I don't go out a lot with friends to eat out. I don't have a bunch of clothes because none of that is of value to me. So it's when you decide what is of value, spend on that, cut out everything else. Then you'll have the money to save for those emergencies and to save for your retirement.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I totally agree with you on that. So our audience is very socially responsible, obviously. So a lot of times these items can be a little more expensive, like organic produce can be more expensive and things like that. There are, and I frankly think I agree with them, that they do, there's a health benefit, right? Mm-hmm. But how do you suggest to people that they frame being willing, spending a little more on something that has more, that matches their values like that, and socially responsible or organic or what have you, rather than buying the generic or the quote normal version, which might be cheaper, mm-hmm. but doesn't match their values in the same way.
So I'd like to start with is what if it's organic or whatever it is that's a little bit more pricey that might be aligned with my values, is it truly a good value? Because just because you slap organic or something doesn't mean it's truly organic. So you got to make sure you do your research that what it's purporting to be is actually that. So once you're satisfied with that, let's say it's an organic apple and it's, from the local grower and it's maybe a couple cents more than you get in the supermarket. Well, you have to say, okay, this is of value to me and I'm okay with spending that. Because you know what? We spend money on stuff that we want, really. I mean, this whole idea that, oh, I can't afford that, that's crazy. Because if you want something, you will spend the money on it. Unless you're, and I don't count those folks who are struggling and living paycheck to paycheck, and for them a couple cents, added to everything is going to be a lot of money. That's a different conversation. But once you decide I value this, then you find other places to cut to make that money worth it to spend on what you want to spend.
What about year-end contributions? I mean, we're at the year-end, people are looking at making contributions. What's your strategy for that?
I think that's great if at the end of the year you think, oh, I haven't given, I should give. But I come at it from a different perspective. My husband and I tithe at our church, meaning we give 10% of our income, our gross income, to our church that we belong to, that we're members, that we serve in, that we volunteer, which then helps in the community, the soup kitchen, helping, people who are in need, that kind of thing. And I think that giving, you have to make giving a priority. Actually, above your mortgage and all other stuff. You got to make giving that number one thing, and that will dictate the rest of your budget, because if you're spending this money out from the beginning to give, hopefully that means you're going to be tight for the other things. And, I know that nonprofits are so grateful to get, an influx of money around the holidays, but guess what, y'all? People hungry in February, too. They hungry in March, too. They need a place to stay in April, even when it's warm. So we have to get out of this idea that, giving is done at the end of everything else, at the end of our budget, at the end of the year. The need is great year long. So make giving a part of your budget, that it's a budget item that is as important as paying your mortgage, which it is for us. We tithe first. We give first before we pay everything else. Because that's a priority, and we do it all year long, not just at the holidays. And again, grateful for your money. If that's the only time you think about giving it, fine. But I want you to think differently. Every paycheck or every month, who can I give to? Who can I think of first before myself? Put other people first and watch the riches come to you afterwards.
Oh, I love that. That's perfect. And you can also give your time.
Yeah, Yeah, but you get both because, you know, the church can't cut on light switcher time. You know, people will say that, and that's fine. We definitely want you to volunteer. I'm huge on volunteering. My husband and I spend an enormous amount of our time volunteering. He and I both volunteer at prisons to teach financial literacy. We have a financial literacy program at our church. So we you know, we're big on giving our time. But guess what, people? The nonprofits and the churches and the community centers, they need to pay their light bill too. They need to pay the cleaning staff for the bathrooms that you use when you come to the centers. You know, they need to remove the snow when it snows, or fix the roof when it's torrential rain. So we value your time, but we need your money too.
No, I totally get that. By the way, do women handle money differently than men do?
You know, when you look at studies, it does show, like for investing, that women tend to be much more conservative, but that actually works in their favor. When I say conservative, I don't mean necessarily in the asset classes, that they don't trade as much, they're not in and out of stuff, so they tend to, you know, figure out what they need to invest in and stick with it, and over time that's better for them. So in that sense, we actually tend to be better investors than men, because men think they know it, you know, when we actually know a little bit more. And then, you know, in a lot of households, the women actually tend to be the treasurer, and that's okay. You know, whatever works in your family, the man or the woman who does the treasurer. But in my experience, I haven't seen a great deal of difference in terms of women are more spenders and men are more savers. I see it a little bit of everything. I think it's pretty equal in terms of who spends and who saves.
No, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. I was in the car business. I worked at Chrysler in the electric car division, and we did market research on who buys cars. And the polling companies, the opinion research companies would call up and say, let me talk to the person who buys the car. And if it's a couple and the woman answered the phone, she'd usually hand the phone to her husband. But what we found out when we drilled down was the woman would pick out cars that she would drive and say, here, honey, here's five cars that I'll drive. Pick one.
Right.
Who's really making the decision on
right.
what
right.
car to buy, right?
Right, exactly. No, I mean, there's this stereotype that you walk in a dealership, you know, talk to the husband, he's doing a deal. But, you know, women wield a lot of influence, in a marriage. And so don't underestimate the power of the female in the household. I mean, if you're a marketer, really.
You're an example. Look at that. So I want to ask you one more thing before I ask you a couple questions about you, and then I'll let you go. But what's your take on this whole issue that we're facing right now with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau? I can't resist the opportunity to ask you.
You know, oh my goodness, I am a big advocate for the CFPB. And I knew Elizabeth Warren before she was big time, when she was in the trenches working with families, working on bankruptcy as a researcher. And so I knew her when. And so I believe in her mission for the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And really, I think we have gotten so partisan now that we hear the rhetoric and we don't really stick to the facts. The fact of the matter is that this watchdog agency was created because of the housing crisis and the recession that we were driven into by financial services companies. And if they were doing what they were supposed to do, there would have been no need for this bureau. And so now that we're doing better, you know, we've got, you know, the GOP and Republicans like, oh, well, you know, they're stymie, you know, lending. People can't lend. And that's just a lie. You still can get a loan pretty much. Everybody and their mama can get a loan pretty much. It's like what you're going to pay for it. But, you know, we are a nation of debtors. You know, there's no issue with people getting money. And what they're saying is they can't make enough money on consumers. They can't, you know, wring out every little dime. I mean, like the payday lending industry is just awful to me. You know, it creates these debt traps for people. And the payday lenders will say, well, these people need the loans. They want the loans. Of course they want the loans. You know, a drowning man is going to want you to throw him a life raft. But if you are a lifesaver, if you're a lifeguard, you know that there's a way to save that drowning person. And it's not just to get in there and have them put their arm around your neck, because they'll take you down. And so you have to know how to help people who are in need. And those payday loans are not the way. And so the Bureau is created to not, you know, tell people what to do with their money, but to make sure that these companies are disclosing fairly and accurately the products that they're selling. and it was created to protect consumers, and it is under attack. And I think people need to understand that we need to defend this agency whose sole purpose is to look out for you. Why would you not want an agency that is going to put your interests first above all else? It's lunacy to me that they have convinced people, like, oh, you know, government is in my business. Well, you know what? If government was not in your business in certain instances, you would be taken advantage of much more than we already are. I'm all for not overburdening businesses. I get that, you know, but there is a time, and that time is right now, to make sure that these financial services industries, credit cards, student loans, are doing the right thing for folks.
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, there are a lot of the people who want to kill it are also the people who say, keep government's hands off my Medicare. So you go figure that one out.
Right. I mean, it's you know, I could go on for days about that. It just makes me so angry. And you know, we've got the new, you know, temporary head of it. And what's the first thing he says? Well, we want to make sure that we are not, you know, hurting the corporations. The name of the agency is the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, not the Corporation Financial Protection Bureau.
Yeah. Oh, no, I hear you loud and clear. So let me talk about you for a moment, and then I'll let you go. How did you get involved with personal financial management? I mean, you have such passion for it. You're obviously very good at it. How did this happen?
It comes from my grandmother who raised me. She was an amazing money manager, even though she didn't have a lot of money, and she never really made more than like $13,000 a year. I mean, she was just an amazing person. She hated debt with a passion, and she sort of passed all this on to me. And I've been working in the financial area of newspapers, you know, pretty much almost since I started working in the business, and then got a column at the Post. And so it is what I sort of believe in. And I was given the opportunity at the Post to write about this. I mean, I was sort of the resident frugal person and penny pincher. And my boss was like, you need to write these stories. And that's sort of how it came about. But it's just something, you know, even from a child, I just, you know, knew how to handle money and always wanted to be financially secure. I'm not about stuff. I don't want to make money to buy stuff. I just want to be secure and help my family and extended friends and stuff be financially well. And that's what I'm about. And so I'm just passionate about it because I see how devastating it can be to families when money isn't handled well. And I just want people to have that sense that they can breathe. And also, I tell you all the time, you work hard. Most of us work really hard. And at the end of the day, don't you want that money to go to the stuff that you really value? I mean, that's really what it's about, right? And then creating legacies so your kids won't have to worry about being drowned in debt and that they can have a secure future.
Well, that also explains why you're doing reporting rather than being a stockbroker or a certified financial planner, for example, because you want to help people. You want to teach people how to use their money, not just make money yourself or manage money. You want to teach people how to do it themselves and how to make their own lives better by managing their money better.
Yeah,
you're really a teacher.
I do think we need the help of financial services. I'm an advocate for having a financial planner when you can and seeking the advice. But for me, it works for me to be a columnist and, you know, volunteer my time in that because I'm not biased. I'm not trying to sell you anything. Except for my book. Definitely go out and buy my book. But other than that, you know, I love that I'm not trying to sell you something. So when I tell you something, there's nothing behind it. You know, and I don't have an agenda. And that, for me, is where a lot of people should get their advice, you know, because, you know, from the newspapers that have good personal financial columnists or reporters, because we don't have an agenda, and we can tell you something a little bit more straight up. Because even the best folks still have an agenda, right? I mean, mm-hmm. it might be a good one, but it's still an agenda. Mm-hmm. And so when you're seeking advice, you know, look for sources that are as unbiased as possible. Like, get a subscription to Consumer Reports, you know, a personal finance magazine like Kipling or something like that, or read your local business section. It's particularly a lot of them on Sundays or certain days of the week have a personal finance section. You know, gobble that news up and feed your, you know, feed yourself with good, balanced information.
Mm-hmm. And I would say get it from various sources so that you're not just ascribing to one philosophy, but that you get to, you, it kind of forces you to think about it for yourself and what's important. As you've said, what's important to you? What is it that you really want it for? So you've had a really interesting career already. So what would you say to women who are facing career transitions or they want to do something differently? I mean, you live your passion, right? What would you suggest to a woman who wants to live and work in her passion, who's kind of, who's already has some experience in an education, not a kid coming out of college necessarily, but someone who's got a few years at least under their belt in a career?
You know, one thing I always said to myself, granted, I've had the luxury to be able to do that because I've always made a pretty good living, is that the day that I walk into my building, wherever I'm working, and I'm not happy or I feel like it's not fulfilling, it's time for me to go. And I think life is way too short to be in a job that you don't like or an area that is not satisfying. Now, I will say this. If for financial reasons you have to stay in a particular job, because it's hard, I mean, to leap to something else, especially if it's not going to pay what you need to create financial security for yourself, then find a way to still meet your passion outside your job. I'm a huge advocate for volunteering, and that's actually, you know, my volunteer time is actually the same as my work time, so I'm in complete heaven. So my passion is financial literacy. I write about it, so I'm like a person in Ben and Jerry's shop, and it never closes, right? Mm-hmm. And you never gain weight from it, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but, you know, and if you want to try to go out on your own in entrepreneurship or something like that, test it out. Spend some time. Make sure you saved up enough money to weather you through the first 2 or 3 years when, you know, the revenue might not be what it needs to be. And so, you know, there are other ways to do what you want to do if you can't leave. Now, if you can leave, and the way to prepare for the leave, so make sure you got your financial life in order so that when you leave, there are no regrets. You've got to have that financial part in place, I believe, before you take the leap, because otherwise then it becomes frustrating and then you're not really happy, and it just creates all kinds of issues.
Well, and the other one that I think a lot of people miss, and especially people who are sort of impulsive about it, and obviously being downsized is a different category,
right,
on this, but is that if you're thinking about leaving, check the fine print and find out what the deadlines are for certain levels of retirement and 401k
right,
distributions and things like that. A lot of people forget or don't know that these allocations are made in gradations of time or level of accomplishment at the company. And so you don't want to leave a month, 6 months, or maybe even a year before you could get a significant payout that could
exactly
make an enormous
exactly
difference
right
down the road.
Yeah, that's exactly.
And so
right,
you need to do some research to find out, you know, what, how does this work? Or, I mean, I had a friend who was in a money management kind of role, and she was dying to get out of there, but she realized that she was due to get a big bonus in 7 months. And she said, you know what, I'm just going to stick it out, and because, you know, that's not worth walking away from.
Yeah, definitely do some planning. I mean, my husband and I are probably maybe about 10 years from retirement or when we want to retire. So we're already doing pre-retirement. We're doing pre-retirement planning because you want to give yourself time to make corrections if what you project is not going to happen. And then there are also changes. You know, pensions are being changed. Your retirement plans are being changed. And so you want to give yourself time to recover if something changes that makes your retirement or your leap to something else different. So you're absolutely right. Just, you know, look before you leap is basically what we're saying.
Right. And if you get downsized, then that's, you know, that's a something else because you're not in control of that.
Yeah, you're not in control. And then perhaps I always try to look for why is this happening and what can I do with it. So if you're downsized, maybe this is an opportunity to take that leap to mm-hmm. some entrepreneurial enterprise that you've been dreaming about.
Right. And I would say also, even if you're not biting, you know, chomping at the bit to become an entrepreneur, use the time to explore doing something that you really want to do, whether it's writing about your experience or, you know, going to visit whoever for a period of time, but use the time to do something that feeds your soul and that expresses, you know, your passion, as you were talking about.
Right.
Right. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us
today. You're welcome.
On Green Connections Radio, Michelle. I really appreciate it. Is there anything we missed? Is there anything that you feel like you need to warn us about or tell us about as we...
I think, you know, just enjoy the holiday, but just remember, as I said at the beginning of the broadcast, you know, that it's not about the presence. It's really about your presence. The things we remember are the memories, and oftentimes those memories don't have a price tag attached to them.
Oh, that's perfect. I love that. Memories don't have a price tag attached. That's perfect. People will remember how you made them feel, not what you bought them.
Right.
Absolutely. So thank you again, Michelle Singletary of The Washington Post, and we will link to her site from our site as well. So what did you hear Michelle say? What was the big tip that you took away from our discussion? Will you change your spending habits based on our conversation? Tweet it to us at Joan Michelson or post it on our Facebook page and like the page while you're there. And ask to join our new private Facebook group or email it to us at info@greenconnectionsradio.com. You can also leave it on iTunes with a review. I'm Joan Michelson. Thank you for joining us. See you next time.
Hi, my name is David Goldberg, president of Edge Studio, a voiceover company. We oversee professional narrators and voice actors for sales videos, training videos, telephone pre-recorded systems, commercials, web videos, and all applications requiring voiceover. And in fact, for over 20 years and in over 100 languages, we have been considered the most trusted and the friendliest leader in the voiceover industry. We're a green company with efforts toward sustainability at all of our studio locations. EdgeStudio.com. Sound people who are happy to help.